It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Alright. Well, I turned the thing on, so theoretically it's doing something. I don't know. Okay, there. No? Alright, so.
Yes. Remember last time when you thought you noticed a problem?
Yes.
For a second?
Yes.
It did cut out in the middle of it. Yeah. I forgot to tell you that. Just for a second, and then it came back.
Now you tell me this. I just noticed that we are one version behind on Audacity, but I didn't fix it because I'm like, it's one version, and we got to do things. So, but that'll probably happen again, so no one else will hear this. Which is too bad, because we have to talk about Carla Byler. She has ruined my day.
I don't know who that is. Or maybe I do, but I don't remember.
So, my brother-in-law works for a rental company in a vacation hotspot. So, lots of rental properties.
Oh.
Recently, because of the global pandemic, people have been canceling their reservations because they are concerned about traveling.
Sure.
They call in and they leave messages. The company has it set up such that it calls to a Google phone and Google speech to text prints them out as like emails that they see.
Mm.
And almost all of them are from people who say they're calling because and canceling because they are worried about Carla Byler.
That crazy woman.
Right? And it's so much more fun to say Carla Byler instead of coronavirus.
Is that somebody?
Because you can blame it on... I mean, theoretically. That's my brother-in-law. He's like, I think this is great blaming everything on her unless I meet somebody with that name. And I'm like, no, that's even better. I'm going to be like, you! You're the reason Tom Hanks can't leave Australia! Like, so it's way more fun to just be like, Carla! So yes, we're all going to start doing this now. When we're talking about the coronavirus, it's not the coronavirus, it's Carla Byler.
Byler.
Yes, Carla Byler.
Well, did you know Carla Byler has visited Iowa? There's 14.
Oh, yeah, no.
14
yeah.
cases, and 13 of them are here in this county.
And for a second, Johnson we thought County. There was a brand new unaccounted for one in the middle of UIHC. But it turns out that so far, I believe, literally every case has been traced to the same cruise ship.
That's right.
From Egypt.
In Johnson County.
Yes.
The one case, or I mean, there might be two cases outside Johnson County. There's other, but they also know what the origins of those are.
Well, and people who are not insane and who are experts in communicable diseases are estimating a quarter to a half of the U.S. population may end up getting it.
Yeah.
And that, today's when it, I think a few things hit today. Because we now have the global pandemic thing.
Right.
And because Italy has essentially locked down its entire country, people really started freaking out today.
Yeah.
A lot of people have started working from home at my work. A lot of people are shocked and appalled that I don't intend to start doing that myself. A lot of people wanted to know how much food and water I had stored, which I'm like, nope.
I don't think my wife's experiencing that at her work. Any particular.
We have it for a while. They've been talking about how this is a thing to consider. And my area at my work has said for a while, and they reiterated today, that if we feel more comfortable working from home, we should feel free to do that. Of course, my area always has a standing policy that as long as you're getting your work done, you can do it wherever.
Right.
But yeah, today it really kicked into high gear, and some people in the company went so far as to tell all the people underneath them to start working from home. But it was very mixed messaging on that. And
well, my wife's work has canceled some trips.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's happening
a lot.
And honestly, most of the trips involving conferences, the conferences are being either switched to online postponed.
That's right. But like at work, she did work from home today, as it turns out, but not because someone recommended it
Of
the virus. It's just she does that sometimes.
I worked from home the last 2 days, I was home the last 2 days. One of them I didn't work because I was sick. The day after we recorded the last podcast, Trish came down with a horrible cold. And it messed her up the whole Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Mm.
And I didn't get it. And on Monday, I bragged to people about how I didn't get it, which never happens. And so Tuesday, I got it.
Well, I hope you didn't get something from me, because as you know, I wasn't feeling that great.
I don't know. But it didn't hit me nearly as bad as it did her. But on that first day, it was like when I woke up in the morning, I slept 10 more hours before going to bed that night. Mm-hmm. Like, just zonked. And then yesterday I was feeling mostly better, but also still a little, and I was like, I don't want to spread it around work. So
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I don't begrudge anybody the precautions they are taking.
Sure.
And I think that in general, all socially isolating procedures are of benefit. And the more you do it, the more the benefit. But there is a risk-benefit process here. I mean, we also don't all isolate ourselves in our homes all winter so that nobody gets the flu, because people do die from the flu.
Right.
So there's a level. And, you know, I'm washing my hands. Not that I wasn't before. I love that everybody's like, wash your hands. Like, why are you not already washing your hands?
Why are there videos online about this?
I'm trying to avoid touching my face. I will admit I'm sucking at that. And I'm avoiding crowded things. And I think that is a good idea for everyone to do. I am not at the point where I'm not going to go to work unless work tells me don't go to work.
I mean, I can tell you, as somewhat of a germaphobe, most of the things they're suggesting are things that germaphobes do all the time including avoiding touching your face.
Yeah.
That's just something that... So.
And honestly, in my case, I'm not worried about getting it. I assume I'm probably going to get it at some point. I'm worried about spreading it around.
That's what I'm worried about, too.
Because I also think if I get it, I mean, it's going to suck, and I would rather not get it. But I don't think it's going to kill me. I think it's going to suck, and then I'll eventually get better.
I feel the same way about my chances.
I don't want to spread it around. And I understand a lot of the things that are happening right now are not about keeping people from getting it. It's about spreading out the time frame.
Yeah.
A lot of places, a lot of schools are closing for like 14 days because that's the incubation cycle, and then hoping that the people who show that stay home because a ton of us are going to get it. It's just about not all getting it so fast that we overwhelm the medical facilities.
Right. But and also, I mean,
dry cough there.
There's some criticism about like closing schools when most of the information about the virus is that it doesn't particularly... it's not particularly dangerous to kids, but
no.
As you said, that's missing the point.
The spread, yeah.
That's missing the point. You're trying to slow down the spread. You don't want to overwhelm the system. Also, kids spread disease like crazy.
Oh my goodness.
So, you know, you don't want them going to their grandma's house and she's got a, you know, an immune system problem, you know, that kind of thing. So I think one of the reasons why all of these precautions are happening when they haven't happened in the past. Because one difference between this particular disease and the other ones is the rate of instead of some diseases where you're only going to infect maybe one or two other people, if you get
it's incredibly
this is
infectious.
Like 4 or 5. That's pretty dramatic.
It's incredibly infectious.
Yeah, very, very virulent.
And it's not that it's a super deadly disease; it's that it's just incredibly infectious.
Now, some people do say that its death rate is higher.
Yes.
Like 1% is higher than 0.5% with a lot of diseases. Although I think there is still some debate as to that number because they don't actually know how many people are getting infected.
Because because our government is handling it really poorly.
But
our government is way more focused on the economic impact than about the health impact.
But 0.5% or 1%, that's still a lot of people.
That's twice as many. I mean, that's a big jump.
Well, right? And even if it was 0.5%, that's still a lot of people too.
Yeah.
That wouldn't die otherwise.
Yeah.
And, you know, could have several good years left. So let's not, you know, put those people in danger by being careless. So,
yeah.
But like you said, you know, there's a lot of personal choice that's going to be involved here. Like you said, weighing pros and cons and things. And a person just has to decide, you know, what. And some people don't have the luxury of working at home. I mean, if you work at McDonald's or something, that's not an option for you.
I have been the one that's in my head right now. And luckily, I don't really have to decide till Monday. And that's good because, again, today I felt a lot of pressure. Like, a lot of people were just appalled that I wasn't doing more. Like, people are freaking out today. Mm. And so, but the one I'm wondering about is I haven't been going to the gym. Mostly because of my back, partially because I got sick and all that stuff.
That also seems like a place where it would spread.
This is what I'm wondering.
Yeah, exercise equipment.
Well, and yeah, but Trish has pointed out, she's like, it's also the place where they douse everything in sanitizer constantly.
Mm-hmm. That's true, I guess.
And so, but the main thing is at this point, I'm mostly just walking on the treadmill, and I could walk outside.
Yeah.
So I haven't. I'm not sure yet. Mm. I'm not sure. What Trish has also suggested is, because there are people that I know that like go there, and if it's a fucking ghost town, maybe that's a sign.
Because
I mean, the gym has not closed itself yet. I haven't gotten any notifications about that or anything, and I haven't been in a while, so it's hard to say.
But. Well, and I'm, you know, my father, who just had surgery a few weeks ago on a heart valve, and it's still having treatment of various kinds, I worry about him a little bit. He's 75.
Of course.
So
at this point, you should worry about him every winter. I mean, basically.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's
but
true.
Yeah, especially the ability to get the infection. Like,
yep.
He should probably stay home, not see a lot of people.
Which I think he's doing.
Yeah. Wash his damn hands. Wash your freaking hands, people.
So yeah, it's.
My parents were like, "Oh, you got all your hand sanitizer?" I was like, "Nope. We got soap and water.
Yeah,
we've been washing our hands."
Yeah, a lot of people
don't touch my face, though.
A lot of people who know of my germophobic tendencies are surprised often when they learn that I don't use hand sanitizer. I don't like it. I just wash with soap and water. I mean, that's...
yeah, hand sanitizer is good if you are in a circumstance where soap and water are not available,
and you really need something. Yeah.
It is not as good as soap and water.
So that's what I do.
I mostly put it on as a novelty when I'm bored in a meeting and it's sitting on the table. I'll do it. I went to a funeral this weekend and the receiving line, they made an announcement before, like, nobody's going to shake any hands or anything like that. Which made sense, especially because it was in a retirement community, but also was weird to me because I had been hugged by several people and shaken somebody's hand already. Mm. So I was like...
I heard a report about
the horses have
that
slipped out the gate already.
On the way here about
I think I fucked up that metaphor.
Shaking hands or whatever, how people are...
Shaking hands is just terrible all the time. I mean, from an infection standpoint and from a germ standpoint, it's a terrible habit.
Well, I mean, again, I'm a germaphobe. I shake people's hands, but then I'm very careful. You know, like if I meet people at a restaurant and we're shaking hands, hey, how you doing, or hugging or whatever... I will wash my hands before the meal comes. I'll do that.
Yeah.
Because that's what you should do. But do you think this report was...
way more into fist bumping.
This report was wondering if the handshaking thing is like, if this is going to like make it something that people don't do anymore.
No, I don't think so. To me, that's like, how is TV going to ruin books? No, I don't think so. There have been issues in the past. And in cold and flu season in general, a lot of people are like, maybe don't shake hands, maybe fist bump. Dude, the elbow one has been a big one. The Asians got the bowing, all that kind of crap. Yeah, I don't imagine, but I don't know. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that is not afraid to tell you the truth about the shadowy conspiracy behind our government, but is too lazy to tell you about it, so we're still not going to.
Nah.
I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 469.
But again, it's not because we're afraid. Lazy.
Yeah, we're not afraid.
No. I'm lazy.
Just not interested. Just doesn't...
What number did you say it was?
469.
I thought I heard you say 649.
Okay.
If he said that, he's a liar. Don't listen to him.
469, folks. If I said something different, I apologize. Yes.
All right. I don't know.
I don't know if I did.
I might have lost my mind.
I might have lost my mind.
Years ago.
That seems more likely.
Many, many years ago. I lose so much track of time. It's only been a week, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. It's been a week. How's your week been?
Well, it's been interesting. This week, for some reason, I don't know why. There's a reason, but I can't remember why. Something triggered it, and then it sort of took over a good portion of my week. Oak Island was part of my week, as it usually is lately, because there's new episodes every Tuesday. But anyway, cryptids that are flying humanoids. Because here's the thing.
I almost want to ask about Oak Island instead. All right, lay it on me.
For the last 3 years, there have been lots of sightings around Chicago of Mothman-type cryptids. And so, I thought...
It's in an urban setting. It could just be Batman.
I don't know.
Batman kind of looked like Mothman.
So I'm reading these stories.
Looking nothing like a bat. Nothing like a bat.
I'm reading these stories, and there are so many of them. It's surprising. And they're all very similar, which that's not so surprising. I mean, sometimes when someone says, look how similar all these accounts are. Yeah, well, after the first three become in the news.
Hope I don't see that Mothman. Look, I saw that Mothman. He looked just like a Mothman.
Which I'm not saying that these people are just copycatting these people or whatever else. I'm just saying.
No, we're not accusing you of doing it on purpose.
Right.
You're just dumb and gullible.
Well, when things work themselves into the larger public conversation, these kinds of things happen. I mean, this is just how the mind works. It's just how it is.
Well, it's the process. I freely admit I'm a skeptic on the level that if I saw something like that, I would most likely not think that I saw a real crypt. I would probably think either I had been fooled or that it was some trick of the light. Something had fooled my brain.
That's what I'm generally going to think if it's me too. I mean, I've talked about experiences on this podcast that I did not take as paranormal experiences, even though they were very strange.
Yeah.
So I'm the same way. If I saw something, I would.
So we are biased in the direction of.
Yes, we are.
Being correct.
Well, being skeptical anyway. But they're still fascinating because, these types of creatures, kind of like the Bigfoot creatures, have been described and documented for centuries, which doesn't tell me they exist. It tells me that there's something in the human psyche that gravitates toward monsters of a particular type.
Yes.
The Bigfoot one, for example, actually makes perfectly good sense when you think about it, how this is a creature that is very much part beast and part human,
mm-hmm.
which you can understand why that would speak existentially to lots of humans throughout history, right? Being scared of this thing that's human enough to be familiar, but animal enough to not be. Uncanny, I guess.
And it also, to me, just makes visual sense. You're out in the woods and the wilderness, so you see something big and hairy. I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of visuals out there that would translate into covered in fur.
Yeah, on its hind legs, only men do, whatever.
Yeah, but like, just in terms of what one sees in the woods and how one might misinterpret that, that makes sense to me.
But it also makes sense that to have almost a primal fear of something that flies, that's intelligent, that, could hunt you
constant,
or whatever.
And the constant human fear that there's something bigger than us. Sure. Well, and I like the idea that the constant fear that there's something bigger than us that will treat us the way we have treated other life forms.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly right.
It's the whole we're scared they'll do it to us, and we know we'll deserve it because we did it
right
already.
Right. Well, and these creatures and all the reports about them, it's hard to miss how much they resemble, Renaissance depictions like demons and things. The Renaissance depictions of demons,
Michelangelo's Bigfoot.
Well.
God.
That's good. I like that.
I know. If it wasn't for Carla Byler, that Michelangelo's Bigfoot might have to be... Michelangelo's Bigfoot might have to be the title.
The reason I make reference to that, though, is because, a lot of people, if you ask them to describe a demon, will describe what a lot of these creatures look like,
yeah.
or, you know, it's large horns, wings, whatever. But that idea didn't come from, like, biblical literature or something.
No.
This came from artists making this up. Now, where did they get it? I don't know. But you can see that art in lots of other cultures also. So there's obviously, running parallel to any religious tradition or ideas, there's this notion of an evil thing looks like this.
This is a little bit of a tangent, but my favorite version of that is the fruit from the
tree of good and evil being an apple, but it's never mentioned that way.
No, and that one is straight up the first artist who did it.
Just made an
just
apple.
Just did an apple, and that became it. It was literally just painters were like, oh, it'd be an apple. And in fact, there have been weird specific sects who had issues with, like, actually it was this. I remembered one that, like, thought it was the banana and things like that.
Oh,
like,
really?
Which is the banana one I'm weird about because I'm like, no, because the banana didn't look any... The banana wasn't edible before we cultivated it.
Well,
no,
I don't know, maybe.
No, but the banana is human cultivated.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
When the banana was found in the wild, it did not look anything like a
banana. Kind of like corn.
Yes.
Corn was originally very... Not what
so that
would
have been, but yeah, that's the one that always cracked me up. People are like, "Oh, Eve with the apple," and I'm like, "Or something else."
Yeah.
Also, I don't think there were apples in the part of the world that were that people are guessing is Eden.
I see what you're saying.
So that one always cracks me up. But yeah, just the right influential people. I think I don't know. A lot of speculative fiction has played on this. That like. Frequently it's a sci-fi thing or whatever where there's some species somewhere else in the universe that looks like demons, and for one some reason or another they had visited this planet before, and so that is what people had associated.
Yeah, in Childhood's End, Arthur C. Clarke's the alien species that visits, visits our planet before the collective conscious things comes and takes us over, they're a species that are never going to step up to that collective consciousness. So they just make a habit of going to the planets where it's about to visit. And in his fiction, I think the way it worked was this was inevitable and people could kind of see.
It was essentially a post-cognition
thing. Yeah.
Yes. Because we were eventually going to evolve to be psychic. Yeah, no, I actually was just looking up Childhood's End not long ago.
Because we, in our human collective consciousness could see that these beings were going to mark the end of our existence.
Yes, so we were scared of them.
Yeah, we were scared of them.
And I've known ones that are interdimensional things, and there's a particular species that looks like that, and they're like, we've assumed that they have shown up before. There was an episode of Outer Limits where beings that look like demons show up, and they're like, actually, we're angels. We're cool. You just, like... your stuff is wrong. And then I believe the twist at the end of the episode is that they actually were evil, which I'm like, that's a lame twist.
Well, that's kind of funny, actually, because it, from the biblical perspective, demons and angels are the same.
Yes, yes.
So...
Well... there are fallen angels in hell. I think depending on how you interpret certain things, there are inhabitants of hell that are not fallen angels.
Oh, well, I mean, in some traditions,
but
I don't think the Bible says
that. The ones that fell from heaven are the ones that inhabit hell, and they were angels, and they still look like angels, they just suck now.
Well, or you'd think. But what that means, though, is that it's just as valid to think all of the angels look like gargoyles or something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, you could say, well, they all look like these feathery creatures. Well, why couldn't they all look like these gargoyle ugly creatures?
They're all shapeshifters. Did you not know?
I know. A lot of people
shapeshifters.
Say that. But
what do you mean a lot of people say that? No, just me.
Oh, no, a lot of people say that.
Damn it. No, this was an original idea I came up with and wrote into a book.
Well, sorry, but it was.
Oh, you suck.
But.
you suck so bad.
I mean, I think the reason people have this image of demons looking like this is probably because of bats and coming out of caves. So the real idea that I think is influencing all these cultures over time to think of evil creatures this way, the first idea is not so much that they have leathery wings and they look like this, but the idea that the bad place is underground.
Yeah.
Now, where that idea comes from, I don't know.
that's where you get into weird stuff, light and dark, and people's fear of the dark, and then the whole associating white with good and black with evil, which is really funny because in Eastern traditions, it's often reversed, which then confuses the shit out of people. And actually, in some other thing, the R.L. Modisett. Is it R.L.? No, I don't remember. There's a guy, the guy who wrote the, I can't remember the name now. He wrote this whole elaborate, like, 22 series novel series of these really thick books, and it was this planet where there were two types of magic. There was order and there was chaos.
Okay.
And initially, it very much has that vibe of, like, the order are the good guys and the chaos are the bad guys. As it goes on, it really extracts the confusion between that.
Yeah.
But
that's interesting.
Order is all about black, and everything is black and dark, and chaos are all white. And, like, that's...
Interesting.
That
actually makes more sense to me.
They were just fucking huge books. I could not get past them. I read the first one twice, but they're too damn big. But yeah, and like in I think in Chinese heroic tradition, frequently black is what the hero wears and white is what the villain wears. Because white is often associated with death.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Because pale. The Jet Li, the hero, is a great example of that. He wears black throughout that, and I think all
the
bad guys
wear white. Oh, yeah, he does. I've seen that movie.
Yeah. But, I mean, I kind of get the light versus darkness aspect, which is where I think it comes from, because there's a fear of the dark, and that totally makes sense, because you can't see in the dark, and therefore you are vulnerable.
Yeah. I guess you're right. That's probably how it sort of evolved. Because, like, even a lot of...
But I think there's a little bit of a leap. I mean, not now, because we're culturally entrenched in it. But I do think there's a leap between light and dark and black and white. Or white and black.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of the way cultures perceive colors.
Right, right, right. Well, but that's a whole... I mean, light and dark and white and black, they're really two different things when you think about it. I mean, like you said,
very much, yeah.
There's a leap that has to be taken.
And there is a cultural thing. In almost all cultures, when you develop colors, it's in a very specific order.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Which I always just find amazing.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
And what's really fun is there are cultures where that's not true. Which frequently you can link to environment. I can't remember. There's one, though, that, like, there, because normally it's black and white, and then you get red. And I forget what tends to come after that. But there was one where they went black and white, and I think then they went turquoise. And I think it had some, it was like an island culture,
sure,
something,
sure.
But where turquoise was really prevalent.
You know what's just occurring to me in this? I'm thinking of a lot of the cultural beliefs that I know of where. Like, in a lot of Native American beliefs, too, are suspicious of things under the ground or, like...
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, some have evil spirits coming out of springs and things like this. That, I think a lot of these cultures tend to look at what's underground as hidden and mysterious.
Yeah.
Whereas what's in the sky is right there.
You can see it,
yeah. Yeah, there's not a lot of thought that there's something beyond the sky that we don't know about.
No.
Like, you feel like there's a lot of cultures think that everything you can see in the sky is everything that there is to see in the sky.
And,
so it seems more open and obvious.
I mean, wherever you are, there's days when there aren't clouds.
Yeah.
Like, that never happens on the ground.
Yeah, it's always...
Yeah, no,
it's always hidden,
sense.
Whatever it is.
And insofar as you can go into the ground, very dark.
That's right.
Very, very dark.
And it can feel colder in the transition.
And this doesn't even consider the ideas of that gravity plays in this.
Mm. Yeah, there's a definitely up and down sense.
I can't speak for exactly how that would translate, but I feel like that would have to be a component.
Yeah, probably is. That's interesting.
You're striving for, like, if you went up, that would be... the place that's harder to get to is theoretically the good place. I don't know.
And, you know, how people perceive birds and things like that. It's like... And flight.
Dinosaurs.
And, you know, I don't know. Another thing is that... another kind of almost universal thing is dreams about flying.
Yeah.
We don't know how far back that goes, but there's no reason to think that humans haven't always dreamed of that. And so they're, you know, that's going to have some kind of association for them. So that's kind of interesting to think about.
This is boring. So there's
I really want to see a medieval painting with a Bigfoot in it.
There you go.
There probably is a medieval painting with like a wild man in it. I'll bet there is.
Probably. So there's a webcomic I read that's a daily one called Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal. Highly recommend it. It is, to me, the next... I feel about it the way I used to feel about XKCD.
Hmm.
And I don't feel that about it. I still look at XKCD every time, but I don't know. It's very hit or miss for me. And this one feels incredibly insightful, and I like it. But there was one today that was a young boy says, "Dad, what's sodomy?" And Dad says, it's a terrible mortal sin. It's when people put penises in places they don't belong." And the kid says, "Oh, you mean like airplanes?" And he's like, "Exactly." And they both shake their fists at an airplane going by. And he goes, "Perverts!"
Like airplanes?
Maybe he didn't say don't belong, but he said that are unnatural. I think that's what he said. Put penises in places that are unnatural. And he's like, "Oh, airplanes. You mean like airplanes?" And he's like, "Exactly."
So yeah, anyway, it's this week, that's what I was doing. I was mostly looking at interesting stories about flying cryptids. And I was very impressed by how similar they were. I mean, we have a flying cryptid in Iowa, the Van Meter Visitor, as I've probably talked about, mm-hmm. which I find very interesting. So I just find that whole thing interesting and in how humans see this stuff and how they interpret it, you know, and hearing the people's stories. I mean, these are the stories these people tell are pretty dramatic.
I love that if we edited out the parts of conversation where you say that you are skeptical and generally don't believe these things exist, you would absolutely sound like the truest believer ever. Well, the way you speak linguistically when talking about them is constantly as though it is a foregone conclusion that they are real, except then when presented with the question, and then you say you don't.
The stories are real.
Well, not, and I think that's the experiences thing. I'm not accusing you of misspeaking or anything, but it's just very fun from a linguistic perspective.
No.
You just sound like you're like, "Oh yeah, we have one of those in Iowa." Yeah.
Well, we have that story. We
exactly. But and you don't say that. Again, I don't think you're speaking incorrectly. It just is amusing. It sounds funny to me because you totally sound like, "Yeah, there's one over there and he's doing all and they're
but
all
these,
here."
These stories don't fascinate you the way they fascinate me. I mean
they don't.
I'm interested by people having experiences that, to me, there's no evidence to suggest that it happened exactly the way they say.
Yes.
But they believe it like it happened exactly the way they say, and that fascinates me.
That does not fascinate me. What they come up with fascinates me. I am fascinated by mythology.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is a form of mythology.
Yeah, that's part of it, right.
But the fact that they believe the mythology doesn't fascinate me. I am beyond the point of being impressed that anybody believes anything. Humans are insane and stupid to just such a huge degree that I'm no longer... The closest I get is where somebody who I would not think would believe something turns out to believe something. Then I'm like, "Whoa, that's weird." But otherwise, I'm like, "Yeah, you're a person that believes that. That there's a person over there that believes something even weirder."
Well, that interests me. But I'm interested in some of the same things that you are, too, anthropological aspects of it. I'm totally
And that's what I've – that's the tricky thing I've discovered as I get older. I am interested in culture. I am not particularly interested in psychology.
Oh.
I am interested in what people do and how they do it together. I am not particularly interested in what's going on in their mind.
Well, I'm interested in all of it. Linguistics, I'm interested in that. I'm interested – it doesn't matter.
I'm interested in linguistics.
I'm interested in all of it. But how was your week?
Well, I was sick, and my wife is sick a bunch. I'm still playing Vampire. I feel like I have left off, or I have not spent enough time on the most interesting thing with Vampire. But I do want to say first, I'm having a hard time. I haven't killed anybody yet.
Oh.
And I'm waiting for, like, an appropriate time, and it's not coming. The game's not hard enough. Like, I'm doing fine without having killed anyone.
Mm.
And I'm kind of trying to roleplay the guy. And he's very much the upper-class British white savior kind of thing.
Mm.
So there's plenty of blind spots in that motif for me to work from.
Sure.
But he's just been succeeding So there's been no point.
Mm.
So it's kind of weird. I do feel good. I had a situation that you get periodically where somebody's, like, dangerous or whatever, and you have to decide, like, are you going to turn them into the authorities? Are you going to let them keep going, or are you going to eat them?
Mm.
And I had come up with a decision. I had a few choices here. And I came up with one that seemed like the most appropriate. But I was nervous about it. And so I ended up going online and looking. And that actually was a bad like bad things would happen if I made that decision.
Mm.
And I should do this one instead. And I thought about it and I was like, no, you know what? That decision is true to it. So I stuck with that. So bad things are going to happen. So now I may feel the need to eat somebody. We'll have to see. But the thing I keep forgetting that is really fascinating, just coincidentally, because I'm playing it now, is the setting is post-World War I London during a huge epidemic of the Spanish flu.
Oh, right. Like 1918.
And I am a doctor.
Yeah.
Also a vampire, but a doctor attempting to help with it.
Sure.
And the weird parallels to what's going on right now.
Oh, yeah.
are fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. Good thing you're not a vampire.
Yeah, as far as you know.
I know you're not a vampire.
That's true.
Because you would have eaten me by now.
Ugh.
Yes, you would. Yes, you would. I know you would have.
Probably just to get you out of the house.
That's what I'm saying.
I see that. All right.
And also because I'm easy. I mean, you know, you'd still be lazy if you were a vampire.
And, like, that's true. and, like, a big part of the game is the various citizens I come across, you know, that I can potentially eat. One thing that decreases the amount of XP they're worth, but also decreases the health level of the district, which can cause problems, is if they are sick.
Mm.
And I can tell if they're sick, and I can fashion remedies for specific illnesses and give them to them.
Mm.
So I do a bunch of that, and they all have different things. And at first, I don't know how to fix all of them, but then later I find things and analyze them, and I can fix other things. So I've been doing a lot of doctoring.
But the more you help them and get to know them, the more higher their XP gets.
Yeah. There are two factors involved. Is if they're ill, then like a big chunk gets taken out of their XP until they're cured.
Mm-hmm.
Or they have hints about them, which are just little bits about who they are and what their life is. And the more of those you get, the more XP they're worth. But not every... It's all relative.
Yeah.
So some characters... Once I found all of their stuff, they're worth 1,000. Some, once I find all their stuff, are worth like 6,000.
Mm.
And they all also have different levels of resistance to my mesmerism, which I have to mesmerize them and take them somewhere secluded to eat them.
Mm.
And my mesmerism is the only thing I can't like upgrade myself. It goes up as I progress through the storyline.
Mm.
So there are some people that I won't be able to eat until near the end of the game. Some of them I probably won't ever be able to eat. I think I only go up to 5.
Mm.
And I've seen people with 6. I've seen one person with a 20.
Ooh.
To be fair, they were also a vampire. I don't think I was supposed to be able to eat them ever. But so these are factors. And frequently the ones that are worth more seem more important to the area. So I think like more there will be more consequences if I take them out of the picture than others. So we'll have to see. Been enjoying that. Trish watched the entire thing before. She was getting the urge to watch it again, and I had it on my list to watch. So we started watching Umbrella Academy.
Okay, sure.
As I suspected, I'm really enjoying it.
This is your first time through?
Yes, yes. Oh. I originally did not watch Umbrella Academy because of two things. One, I always hate superhero TV shows. And two, everyone in the world was giving the same review of Umbrella Academy, which is, it's totally fine.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, that's what we thought too.
And that's what everybody, including Trish at the time, but she got more into it as time goes on, and as she sat with it afterwards thinking about it, and mostly bits dribbled in about it from the world.
Mm-hmm.
I keep an eye on pop culture stuff. And the more I heard about it, the more it seemed like the kind of thing I would like.
Oh, okay.
And I think it is so far.
Oh, that's good.
The really fun game right now is I keep ranking the siblings in terms of who I hate the most and who I love the most. And Trish finds it very interesting. A, she doesn't agree. And in some things, like, it will probably change later.
Right.
But right now I'm 100% Team Klaus, and we've gone through 2 full episodes. And I know most people hate Klaus, but I'm like, no, fucking love Klaus.
I mean, Klaus was okay. The actor was fantastic.
I understand him the best. Like, he does bad stuff, but I absolutely get where he's coming from. Diego and a very close second, Luther, are my least favorite by a long margin. I just hate them both so much. I'm trying to warm up to 5. It's not working too well. Allison, at this point, is a non-character. I'm hoping she'll be more interesting. And I like Ellen Page, but part of that is, given her situation, I feel like she'll be super important later. And part of that is also, I just really like Ellen Page, and so I think that's getting in the way. I am absolutely Team Klaus all the way, and I absolutely fucking hate Diego, and slightly less, but also hate Luther. Love Pogo. Who doesn't love Pogo? I was also confused. I'm like, where the fuck is Mary J. Blige? I don't see Mary J. There's one black woman in this, and it's not Mary J. Blige. I can tell. She showed up in the next episode. Oh. She's credited in all of them, which is weird, but she wasn't in that first one. I didn't know Mary J. Blige acted. But, I mean, I'm enjoying it so far quite a bit.
That's good.
What else is going on in the news? Sorry, that's what old stand-ups used to say. I don't think I got anything else. We should probably draw us stuff. My trip to San Diego is canceled. I think I told you that. I don't know that I told the listeners that. Because of Carla Filer.
That is pretty cool. I like that a lot.
It is.
But I'm going to forget it, and I'm going to kick myself.
See, that's why I'm thinking of keeping the episode title at, but I also like Michelangelo's Bigfoot.
That's tough.
Right?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
I feel like by the rules of titling, it should be Michelangelo's Bigfoot because it's something we come up. I don't like when I front load with a title.
Yeah, I hear.
So it might have to be Michelangelo's Bigfoot. We'll have to see. We'll see what I do.
Beth wants to know.
What does Beth want to know?
What will be the fate of the Iowa caucus in 2024 and beyond? Will Iowans still caucus? Will we primary? Will we still be first? These are all good questions, if you care about such things.
Do you not?
Well.
Do you caucus? I don't remember.
Well, as we've discussed, it's a party thing, and I don't belong to a party.
Oh, that's right. So you can't caucus. All right.
I mean, I could. I could register as...
No, as things currently lie, you cannot caucus. All right.
But I also don't... I'm perfectly happy with whoever either party comes up with.
So you have no interest in caucusing.
That's right.
All right.
In fact, someone came to my... You know, during the whole caucus thing, people were coming to our house all the time.
Yeah.
And I would talk to them. My wife didn't talk to them. I would talk to them. And I don't remember who this person was supporting, but they were trying to talk. They were trying to, you know, morally browbeat me into doing it.
Oh, that's always good.
Like I should care.
Yeah.
Who the Democratic nominee is. And I just kept having to explain to this person, I don't have any reason to care about this. Oh, but don't you care about this, that, or the other thing? I care about those things, but to me, there's no connection between those things and what I should or shouldn't do. To you, there is, but she was trying to impose her values onto how I think about it.
And just in general, the more I get solicited on that kind of stuff, the less I like that candidate, even if it's the one I supported.
Sure. Well,
like, I was never a huge fan of Buttigieg, but... It got worse and worse and worse because he had so many goddamn commercials.
Well, the point I was trying to make to this person was, you know, I don't have the same values that you have.
Yeah.
So you can't judge my decisions based on your values. Mm. But she just couldn't let it go. It's like, because to her values weren't just her values. They were the correct ones.
Yeah.
And mine were the incorrect ones. And
well, I think it mostly came down to the idea that you had to be either Democrat or Republican. And so if you cared about those things, sure as hell weren't the Republicans backing it, so it must be the Democrats.
Well, what it really came down to was it had to do with,
Who was the candidate they were shooting for?
I want to say it was Bernie.
Yeah.
But
there's some.
I'm pretty sure it was.
Very vehement. Folks in that,
but it, to her it was about beating Trump.
Yeah.
And when that and to her, since that's the most important thing, everything after that is a strategy. It's like, well, you know, it's not likely a third party is going to win because I mean, she would say, she would make up some thing for why that doesn't happen. She wouldn't say it's because the two parties lie to everybody and it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, but she would say the odds that someone other than a Democrat's going to win isn't very high, so everybody should get behind the Democrat. You know, this whole thing that she comes up with for herself to insist that you've got to support this person, and if you support anybody else, you don't care about beating Trump. Is basically what her argument was.
I hope she wasn't Bernie then, because even if you go so far as to say you have to support the Democrat because that's the only person who can beat Trump, the argument that Bernie is the best, the most likely one to pull that off is tough.
Well, she thought so.
Yeah, like that's the bottleneck at which I think you could cut her off pretty fast.
Her argument, which was mostly a moral argument, was, you know, if you're a moral person, you want to see Trump lose. And if you want to see Trump lose, then you have to support this candidate. Mm. And so I was being immoral if I didn't support her candidate.
Oh, yeah. Out of curiosity, how long was this conversation you had with this person?
Probably 20 minutes.
You know you could have ended it way sooner, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just checking. I wanted to make sure that you essentially did this by choice.
Oh, no, I did.
Okay, okay. Because from that perspective, I think it's actually almost kind of fun to be like, oh, really? All right, let's walk through this.
Well, I would say overall the conversation was fine. It was just that
Yeah, but also pointless.
Well, there were other things in the conversation besides that.
I have a similar vibe when I get religious proselytizers. If I'm in the right mood, I'm like, let's talk this through.
But I'm glad you brought that up because it's exactly the same thing.
Oh, no, without a doubt.
You're taking your moral position, which is subjective and relative, and you're insisting that it's not that. It's an objective truth.
Yeah.
Well, that's insane to do that.
Yeah.
But the whole conversation wasn't that. We talked about some other things, and it was actually a very pleasant conversation overall. But anyway, let me start. If I can try to answer some of these questions, let me start by saying I can't think of any reason why Iowa wouldn't continue to be first. I mean,
it's in the Constitution. No, it's in our state constitution, I believe.
I'd have to check on that.
Maybe not. It is a law. It is an Iowa state law.
Sure, but I mean, I don't see anyone really doing anything about it, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
And if they do, fine, but I don't think they will. I think the best questions on here are about whether or not we'll switch to a primary or not. Now, I didn't know this, but one of the states that just voted on Tuesday, and I don't remember which one, has caucuses and primaries. And I like that because the reason they have because in Iowa, what the caucuses are, aside from the fact that you're sending delegates for the delegates for the nominee, is you're supposed to talk about
planks in the platform.
Yeah. So this state has decided, well, let's separate these two things out. Let's still have the caucus for the party building and the platform and stuff, and let's make the selection of the delegates a primary, a separate thing. I think that's a great idea. Because I do think, I mean, I'm not a party person, but I've talked to party people, and they always seem to think that there's value in the caucus system for that other stuff.
Yeah.
Well, then why not split it out? Why not have a primary for the delegates? And if you want a caucus for the other stuff, you can do that. That sounds reasonable to me. It wouldn't mean anything to me if we dumped the caucus and just primaried. But I think some people who are party people, Republicans and Democrats, would miss it.
How do other states determine their state party platforms?
Without caucuses?
Yeah.
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Just whoever becomes a delegate gets to decide, I guess, maybe? I don't know.
Maybe they just don't put that up to a vote or discussion. You know, like we do. Or we used to anyway. I don't know if we even still do.
I don't care for a lot of reasons, as I've made clear in the past. I think there's going to be a problem. Because there have already been legal challenges to the current caucus system. And they're fairly self-evident in a way that I think the caucus system can't survive without overhaul to the degree that I'm not sure it's a caucus system anymore. But the legal component that shows up then is there's a law in Iowa that says we have to be the first caucus in the nation, and there's a law in New Hampshire that says we have to be the first primary in the nation.
Oh, see, I wasn't aware of that
yes.
kind of conflict.
That's why those two are both when they are, because they were so into it.
So you're saying that Iowa couldn't say, well, forget caucuses, we'll do primaries, because then they're going to bump heads with New Hampshire.
Well, and then it becomes a race of who can do it earlier. And admittedly, you can play that game for a while. It's been done before, but you can only go back so far. And if they both have that law, it becomes a vicious cycle.
Well, I mean, Iowa...
Maybe eventually they decide to do it on the exact same date.
The Iowa Democrats did change the caucus process pretty significantly. I remember when I heard what they were going to do that was different, and I thought, boy, you guys are really making this almost like a primary.
And... Well, and the major legal challenge is people who can't be there.
Yeah, yeah.
And to me, once you have absentee caucusing,
yeah,
that's basically a primary.
That's right.
That being said, I don't think that's an invalid legal challenge.
Sure.
It is unfair to say, this is how we're doing our process, and you have to have that night off.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a sticky thing that makes me glad I don't care.
But I wonder how legal challenges can survive, because this is the parties are basically private entities. I mean, they can do whatever they want. They could just pick a nominee. They wouldn't even have to have primaries or caucuses.
See, and I don't know how that applies.
There's no law.
But there are laws with regard to elections. And surely there's a point at which one is a private entity doing whatever the fuck it wants to do, and one is a point at which you're involved in screwing up federal process. And I think it may be a kind of gray area where that is. I mean, you are right in that the caucuses and the parties doing the caucuses have nothing to do with federal law.
No.
Although that might not even be true anymore, because I'm betting both parties get federal funds.
Well, there is that. I don't know how that interacts with everything.
And there are always strings attached to federal funds. Yeah, and that's the thing, is they're so ridiculously entrenched at this point that I don't know how it works. And of course, potentially there are state laws related to parties.
Yes, right. There usually are.
And again, the state constitution may have some wording in it that would make the behaviors unconstitutional. I don't know what the state
I'd have to look at that because I'm not aware of
no.
that.
And I don't know, but I could see a circumstance in where that's the case.
Because if that's true, then that means that some Iowa policy, statute, law, or whatever favors parties of a particular type. The type that's going to have primaries and caucuses and things like that. Not all of them are going to.
Nope.
And that seems weird that they would, that would be, in especially in the Constitution. But I mean, I've read the Iowa Constitution. It seems like I would remember that.
It seems like you probably would. So maybe there's nothing like that.
I might not.
Well, and there's also laws that aren't in the Constitution on both the state and federal level.
Yeah, and there's things that, I mean, I've read the Iowa Code mostly too. And
I
remember seeing that.
Betting there are bylaws in those two private organizations.
Sure, sure.
That are factors. Yeah, I don't know.
There's a lot of complicated things going on. But
yeah.
My opinion is, I don't see why. I hadn't considered what you said before about the conflict between the first caucus and the first primary. I hadn't thought about that.
It was.
So that might
be
a thing.
08? There was one year where every state was suddenly like, we're going to do it first. And like suddenly so many primaries were being pushed back. And then I think for a little while, Iowa and New Hampshire both were going to be like in December or something.
Oh.
And eventually people calmed the fuck down.
Well, I don't remember any of that.
But I can't remember when it was. Maybe it was 2000? I don't know. There was some election where that was a thing. A bunch of people were moving. Because there's a ton of incentive to be the first in the nation. And there's not a lot of downside from the state that's doing it. Being first in the nation is a pretty significant economic boom because everybody shows up here.
Yeah.
And it's also hugely influential on the process.
Well, people drop out afterwards and things.
Yes, yeah. and people who don't have a lot of standing nationally fucking camp out in Iowa,
sure,
make a big name for themselves. Jimmy Carter did it. That was his whole thing. Jimmy Carter was not particularly well known or well regarded. He focused all of his energy in Iowa, came out of it, I think, only second, but it was enough to draw attention to him. And the momentum went from there.
Sure.
So there is no incentive for Iowa to not want that. That being said, I would feel much better if Iowa did not have that.
Well, I mean...
Iowa's not exactly demographically representative of the nation.
That's...
Not that there is any state that particularly is, necessarily.
That's the problem with looking at it that way is are we going to pick the state based on that?
No, I'm actually of the opinion that we do the shit like European ones do. We do it all on the same day. We only allow like 3 weeks of debating beforehand.
But here's the...
Every member of every party gets to be at every polling place and they count the votes
together.
Here's
the thing. Just about every criticism of Iowa being first didn't even apply to this cycle. Biden didn't win any of the early races.
Now
he's the front runner. So the argument that you mess up who the front runner is somehow, that didn't come into play.
No, it definitely did not this year.
Also, people are going to drop out and they're not going to, no one's going to have a chance to vote for them. Nobody dropped out between Iowa and New Hampshire. Did very many people drop out between New Hampshire and anywhere else?
No, South Carolina was the big one this year. South Carolina killed a lot of people.
So that didn't apply this time. So, you know, like you just pointed out, it probably would be better if everyone sort of did it at once.
Well,
but as long as that's not true, someone's going to be first, and it doesn't really...
Or even just fucking mix it up a little bit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like rotate it or something.
Yeah,
that would be fine. But, of course, I don't have any, I love Iowa, as everybody knows, and I like when something good happens to Iowa, and being first usually means an economic boost or whatever. But... all of that taken into account, even, I don't care if I was first. I don't personally. Sometimes I wish it wasn't because I think it's sometimes more trouble than it's worth.
And I hate getting all the commercials.
But, you know.
Because the commercials are useless.
I think it will remain first because I don't think anyone's going to do anything about it.
I don't want you to name a name here. But prior to the caucuses in Iowa... when you had the full spectrum of candidates out there.
Yeah.
Did you have any that you thought were likely somebody that you would support if they made it to the end? Was there anybody that you liked? Not just that you were like, I'm going to keep an eye on them, but anybody that you were like, yeah, if they get some party's candidacy, I will vote for them probably.
Yeah, there was... there's really two parts to this answer. If I understand your question, I think there was one particular person.
Okay.
Where I thought I'd be really tempted to vote for that person.
Okay. That was pretty much what my question.
But even though there was only one person I thought that about, Jazz asked me about various people.
And that early on, you definitely want to keep an open mind.
Yeah. And said, is this a person that you would consider?
Yeah.
And there were plenty.
Me too.
Actually.
By the time the caucuses came around, I knew who I would have caucused for.
Yeah.
But there were several people. Unfortunately, none of them are left.
I mean, what it almost always comes down to for me is foreign policy. You know, it's like, can I see this person sitting across the table from Putin and holding their own? And there were a lot of people in the field who I could say yes to that.
Mm.
So just that would... mean that I don't know who's going to be running down the road. I don't know how I'm going to vote.
Yeah.
But if I can say I would be comfortable with them sitting across from Vladimir Putin, then that at least puts them in the running.
Yeah.
And so I can say that about a lot of people.
I don't think, I mean, everything has to be a factor. If you're bad enough at any aspect of the job, I don't want you. But
sure.
I would say foreign policy is not one of my heavy weighted factors.
Well, and it's a heavy one for me always.
Yeah. But, that's interesting. I would not have guessed that. Yeah, I don't think that's a...
Well, partly because...
a big one for me.
You know, to me, I think of Congress as being responsible mostly for domestic stuff, and I work very hard to communicate with my representatives that that they defend that responsibility and not get pushed around by the president. But there's not a lot they can do about the president sitting at the table with Vladimir Putin.
Yeah,
so to me,
that's
the thing that makes the most
see, I would go more
sense
in the,
to think about.
I think there are other qualities that I think potentially determine what kind of cabinet they appoint and those things. Because
that's good
I'm
thing
like,
to think about. For
not
sure.
necessarily a president who will sit across from Putin, but a president who knows what a good secretary of state
looks
like.
Yes, that's a good point. That's a very good point. Yep. Or a good secretary of defense or any of that stuff. Yep.
But I don't know. I don't think I have a thing like that. I feel like they throw out their policies and I'm like, nope, don't like that, like that, don't like that. And it's amazing that I do that because in theory they're pandering. So they're trying to tell me they support everything I support. But they never do.
Well, you have to keep in mind.
I mean, they never even do in terms of the bullshit they're saying to me.
Right. But you have to keep in mind that, you know, I review all of the platforms and there's never been a party that has a platform that I agree with 100%.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So I'm used to not liking the person 100%.
Yeah.
So I have to prioritize. I have to say, well, this is going to be more important to me than this. And those are the priorities I apply to it.
In the UK, there is a political party called the Women's Equality Party.
Hmm.
It's fairly recent. It was co-founded by Sandy Toksvig, who I adore. And it is a largely progressive party, but its primary platform, like, is unsurprisingly, is equality between the sexes politically and legally and all that.
Sure.
Which I love. Right. And I'm super with that. I was thinking the other day with somebody about founding a policy. I thought in this country, I think we have to do, it has to just be the Equality Party and we have to include race and things like that in here because especially in this country, there's a lot of a divide there. But I think that would be cool to found a political party whose defining platforms were just equal under the eyes of the law, regardless of sex, race,
and
orientation.
And ferreting out the instances where that's not happening.
Yeah, well, and yeah, and just making that the primary thing.
Yeah.
Like, that would be a great party. Unfortunately, I don't want to take the effort to try and run a political party, so I'm not going to do that. But that would be cool. We're out of time, people.
Oh.
So.
That's too bad.
Caucus amongst yourselves. Her name is Carla Byler. C-A-R-L-A. B-Y-L-E-R as all her fault. And when you get a chance, go to Chicago Metropolitan Art Museum and see Michelangelo's Bigfoot.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.